In this week's Chapelboro Week in Review, special education teachers at East Chapel Hill High School express frustration over recent administrative actions. The community remembers James Cates 51 years after his death, and six young ladies had the chance to jump their way into the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. All that and more in this week's Chapelboro Week in Review on 97.9 The Hill. I'm Elle Karras. Welcome in to the Chapelboro Week in Review on 97.9 The Hill. This program is brought to you by Chapelboro.com, your daily local news source. The Exceptional Children Department at East Chapel Hill High School is in turmoil, with several department educators expressing concern over recent administrative actions. According to these educators, several complaints have been filed with the Human Resources Department at Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools, as two teachers' assistants were asked to move out of the classroom because of their race. You can hear that story now. Daryl Parker has been a teacher's assistant in East Chapel Hill's Exceptional Children Department for nearly 20 years. Recently, however, Parker said he's been pushed in and out of his regular classroom after one parent requested that their child doesn't work with African-American males.
So I'm saying to myself, since when can parents pick and choose who works with their children?
On October 4th, Parker said a department-wide meeting was called by Assistant Principal Ileana Herrera and Adaptive Curriculum teacher Constance Letter. Adaptive Curriculum students fall under the Exceptional Children umbrella, consisting of those with special needs or varying levels of learning disabilities. At that meeting, Parker said administrators chose to support the parents' request to remove black males from Letter's classroom.
The actual principal himself wanted me to move, and I'm like, no, I'm not moving. I'm not moving. And so I left it like that because I said, this is not right. I have not done anything. I can't help that I'm black. I'm sorry the parents feel the way that they do, but I'm not moving.
Tanya Stanley is an adapted curriculum special education teacher at East Chapel Hill. After that October meeting, she told 97.9 The Hill that she filed her own grievances with the district's Human Resources Department, advocating for Parker's right to stay in Letter's classroom. Stanley said she left the meeting confused as to why the administration would try to honor a parent's request to remove African-American TAs from their child's classroom, and that Assistant Principal Herrera's comments at the meeting only added to the confusion.
She made the reference to saying that it was like a gun put to her head because she was going to have to do this and she didn't have any other choice.
In an email obtained by 97.9 The Hill, Herrera told Parker he could either leave Letter's classroom or go to work with a general ed population, away from the exceptional children he has dedicated his career to.
These kids that's in the program do not adapt well to change. There has to be a consistency because it takes time for these kids to build relationships with you and to trust you. And to suddenly take that away from them, They don't do well. They really don't. And you see subtle changes in them.
Daryl Parker wasn't the only TA affected by these administrative actions. According to Stanley, Adam Watkins, another African-American TA at East Chapel Hill, turned in his resignation after he, too, was asked to leave Letter's classroom.
It goes back to understanding why they're allowing the conduct of a teacher in that classroom to continue to lose TAs. And then also, why are they supporting a parent who's requesting that no African Americans be in the room?
After having worked in the school system for more than 10 years, Watkins' last day was November 4th, as confirmed by CHCCS. When Stanley voiced her concerns to Herrera regarding interdepartment TA movement, the discussion was turned over to East Chapel Hill High Principal Ken Prue. On September 20th, Prue sent out an email stating that Adam Watkins would move from Letter's classroom. However, Stanley said Watkins resigned before that could happen.
He was an awesome jewel at Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools. He was a coach. He was a bus driver. He was a TA. He was a mentor. He was all those things to all students, not just students with disabilities.
As of November 23rd, Stanley told 97.9 The Hill that this issue has still largely remained unaddressed by the administration. And while she's met with the Lincoln Center to review her grievances and begin an investigation, Stanley said the summary of investigation findings has still not been released to her.
I love working at Chapel Hill, but no employee should have to endure as much harassment and loss or threat of employment as I have in this district.
After weeks of back and forth and ongoing requests to move from his current department, Parker said he is still in Letter's classroom, with confirmation from the district that no TAs are being reassigned to different classrooms at this time. Although, while Parker gets to continue working in Letter's classroom, serving the students he has come to know very well, he said he expects more from the school district.
And to see our educational system result to this, I feel bad. And I shouldn't, but I do. I feel bad. I'm from Chapel Hill. My kids graduated from Chapel Hill. I graduated from Chapel Hill. And to see that the school system is at this state now, it's deplorable.
97.9 The Hill and Chapelboro.com will continue to follow up with educators and provide additional context as we learn more about the working culture at East Chapel Hill High. Stay tuned for more coverage. In other school district news, Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools had the week off for Thanksgiving break, but also for a mental health break. In late October, the district's Board of Education approved several teacher workdays and wellness days to allow everyone more time off to maintain their mental health. The entire week of Thanksgiving was an off week for students. Additionally, teachers had Tuesday and Wednesday off, with Monday having served as an optional teacher workday. Chair of CHCCS's Board of Education, Jillian Lacerna, spoke with 97.9 The Hill about the importance of prioritizing the social and emotional well-being of students and staff.
From being on the ground before the pandemic, this is not just an issue of the pandemic, right? But mental health needs of our students were really an issue prior to the pandemic, and thinking about, you know, also at the state level, when we think about how many counselors is the state providing, how many psychologists, how many social workers, and some of the caseloads, you know, are just too high for those positions coming down from the state. So, you know, you see schools really across the state, but across the country, thinking about, you know, how can we better support students, not just academically, but also socially and emotionally. And I think that this is really a priority for the board and also the district administration, not only through these days, but through other supports that we offer through schools. And so I'm really excited about the leadership right now in our district to really think about that. Everything from, you know, access to services to what policies do we have in place that are, you know, either positively or negatively impacting our students. Social and emotional well-being. So I'm really excited about the work in this area, and I think it's something that you'll see the district continue to prioritize in the coming months and years.
Coming up next, the UNC community remembers James Cates 51 years after his murder on campus. You're listening to the Chapelboro Week in Review. Welcome back to the Chapelboro Week in Review on 97.9 The Hill. Brought to you by Chapelboro.com, your daily local news source. I'm Elle Karras. This past week marked 51 years since the tragic murder of James Cates, a black man who was stabbed at just 22 years old in the middle of UNC's campus. Recently, community organizers and members of the Cates family reflected on his life and the lessons learned from the institutional failures that led to his death. 97.9 The Hill's Ben Rappaport reports.
On the cold and rainy night of November 21, 1970, James Lewis Cates Jr. was invited to an all-night dance in the Carolina Student Union with the aim of improving race relations. The student population at the time was just 2% black. That night, a Nazi-supporting motorcycle gang known as the Stormtroopers appeared on campus and got into a fight with the black youth at the dance. During the fight, Cates was stabbed twice and left to bleed in the middle of the pit. 51 years later, family members say they still haven't reconciled with the painful memory. At a webinar hosted by the Chapel Hill Public Library last Thursday, first cousin of James Cates, Senator Valerie Fushi, said the events of that night still haunt her.
He was an important member of our community in Chapel Hill and a beloved family member. After 51 years, our family still feels the sting of his untimely death and the trauma that led to the way that his life was devalued before and after his murder.
Fushi said many institutions are complicit in her cousin's murder, including the town of Chapel Hill, local police forces, and the university. Historical documents show the Chapel Hill Police Department did not arrest anyone after James Cates was stabbed, and some suggest they even encouraged the stormtroopers to flee the scene. Much of that research comes from journalist and community activist Mike Ogle, who has researched the Cates murder for more than 3 years. Ogle said the evidence suggests Cates' death was preventable, had police and medical support arrived in a timely fashion.
In a letter to the editor sent to both the Daily Tar Heel and the Chapel Hill Weekly, a white UNC student in attendance wrote, "I find it hard to believe that a flock of policemen stood by to let this victim lie bleeding as much as 30 or 40 minutes before finally shoving him into the back seat of a police car. I find myself wondering that had the victim been a white college student, would he have waited so long to be medically treated?"
Beyond the horrific death of Cates, Ogle said the equally disheartening part of the history is the institutional failure on so many levels, something he believes we're still grappling with today.
"For many in the local Black community, James Cates was a clarifying moment after the hard-fought civil rights gains of the 1960s. It loudly showed that not so much had changed after all, even in Chapel Hill. For some, James Cates was like their Emmett Till, yet outside of his community, most everybody quickly forgot. James Cates was almost immediately erased from local history."
Last year, community organizers, students, and members of the Cates family established the James Cates Remembrance Coalition. The goal of the coalition is to honor his legacy, create a critical oral histories project, and advocate for the renaming of the UNC student stores after James Lewis Cates Jr., something which is still pending approval from the UNC Board of Trustees. The coalition has worked to educate people of all generations about the story of James Cates. Julia Clark, a member of the coalition and a UNC student, said this history is important to remember because she believes it is often intentionally pushed out of our consciousness, especially by the university.
"I think a lot of times we desensitize ourselves so much to Black trauma that we choose to not learn who people are as people, and instead just consume stories of Black pain without understanding the faces behind that pain."
One of the people that does know the face behind the pain is close friend and classmate of James Cates, Bernice Hackney. He said while his friend should still be alive today, he believes justice will come.
"So we expected justice. We always expect justice. Our experiences as people of color, however, has taught us that American jurisprudence does not always equate to justice. One of the bedrock principles of our legal system is justice delayed is justice denied. So it was in James Cates' case, and the proverbial clock is still ticking."
It is through the work of community members, close friends like Hackney, and the coalition that the legacy of James Cates lives on in the long march towards social justice in Chapel Hill. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Ben Rappaport.
You've been listening to the Chapelboro Week in Review here on 97.9 The Hill, which is brought to you by hashtag Heard on the Hill. Just hop on Facebook or Twitter and post that you heard the Chapelboro Week in Review using the hashtag Heard on the Hill, and you'll be entered to win $979. For more chances to win and to get a schedule to give you hints about upcoming cues, head to chapelboro.com/heardonthehill. More to come on the Chapelboro Week in Review after this. Welcome back to the final segment of the Chapelboro Week in Review on 97.9 The Hill. This program is brought to you by Chapelboro.com, your daily local news source. As the holiday season kicked off with Thanksgiving this week, a longtime tradition for many is tuning in to watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Celebrating its 95th anniversary this year, the parade featured a smorgasbord of giant character balloons, celebrities, floats, marching bands, and even a troop of jump ropers. This year, more than 100 jump rope athletes participated in the pageantry of the parade. This performance group consisted of 25 jump rope teams from across the nation, including a team right here in Chapel Hill. Ahead of their trip to the Big Apple, I spoke with members of the Chapel Hill jump rope team before their big performance. Let's take a listen. This past Thursday, members of the AeroTrix jump rope team gathered at Martin Luther King Jr. Park in Carrboro to practice their skills. Founded in 2019, AeroTrix is a nonprofit organization offering jump rope instruction for recreation, competition, and now the chance to participate in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
There'll be a routine that we do during the parade, which is kind of just repeats itself, has like a resting portion where we're not jumping, it's just side swings, just swinging the rope to the side, and then a jumping portion because their plan is to jump the full 3 miles.
That's Gary Anderson, coach of Chapel Hill's AeroTrix team. He's been a jump coach for 20 years, and this year, 6 members of his team will get to hop, skip, and jump their way down the streets of New York, showcasing the skills they've been honing over the past few months.
And we've almost handled it like training for like a marathon or a long distance. It's just building up and going further and further and further. And these guys are ready now, though. We've been going to McDougal Middle School and using their track on Sundays for an extra 2-hour practice outside of all of our other practices.
Organized by the Heartbeats jump rope team in Cleveland, Ohio, AeroTrix team members will appear under the acronym JUMP, short for Jumpers United for Macy's Parade. While this will be the 5th time JUMP appears in the Thanksgiving Day Parade, it will be the first time for athletes from the Chapel Hill group. Kate Palmer is one of the 6 AeroTrix jumpers participating in the parade. A sophomore at Chapel Hill High School, she's been jumping for 7 years.
Jump rope isn't a sport that a lot of people know about. So the fact that it's going to be on national television and, like, that's going to be us is really exciting.
Starting from Central Park, Kate, alongside 111 other jump athletes, will jump her way down the entire 2.8-mile course that winds through New York City. After arriving at the fabled Herald Square in front of the Macy's flagship store, the group will be featured in a live 1-minute broadcast on NBC, which is expected to have an estimated 50 million viewers.
For the Herald Square routine, we do have a song. It's a version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town. It's sort of a country version. I don't really know how to describe it, but I definitely heard that song a lot recently.
The choreographed routine consists of a complex, interconnected double Dutch matrix, flanked on both sides by a single rope routine. It will also include national and world jump rope champions, which Kate said has been amazing to be around.
And then also just people that are like, you know, my heroes. I'm like, wow, that's someone who I know is really good and has been jumping forever. And they're just like right over there practicing with me. So it's really cool.
Members of JUMP range from age 12 to 26. At just 13 years old, AeroTrix team member and McDougal Middle School student Adrian Cook is one of the youngest. And while this is her 8th year jumping, being on live television can be a little daunting.
I've told a couple people and they're like, oh, we're going to turn it on. There's going to be like people watching. So it's really exciting, like, just to be in it because it's a very rare opportunity. And the thing that I'm most nervous about is probably, I guess, also having the people like watching me because it's like kind of a lot of pressure. But I'm really excited.
Be sure to tune in at 9 a.m. on Thanksgiving Day to watch members of the AeroTrix team skip their way into the spotlight. That's all for this week's program, but you can find more stories we didn't quite have time for by visiting chapelboro.com, your daily local news source. This has been the Chapelboro Week in Review on 97.9 The Hill. I'm Elle Karras. Have a great weekend.